When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there. Ho there. Hi again. This is Josh. There's Chuck. There's Jerry. You put us together. You give us like a 12-minute time limit, maybe less. It's Short Stuff, the podcast that's a shorter version of Stuff You Should Know, which is also a podcast, but it's a longer version of Short Stuff, I guess you could say.
That's right. And as per tradition, you started off the show by saying, hey there, ho there.
Right.
You want to talk about Black Loyalists?
I do, man. So you picked this one. Hats off to you. Tri-cornered hat with a big old Yankee Doodle feather off to you. Because I'd never heard anything about this. And I majored in history, colonial history, and I didn't even pick up on this one.
Yeah, so this is we did a regular long form episode for Black History Month on Tuskegee Airmen, and now we're doing a shorty version for the Black Loyalists for Black History Month, and it goes a little something like this: a one and a two.
So the Black Loyalists, Chuck,
yes,
are in a very much overlooked group in American history, and
yeah,
they were African-Americans, or I guess African slaves who lived in the colonies, some of whom were free too, but mostly were slaves that ended up fighting for Great Britain in the American Revolutionary War.
Yeah, so it's important to kind of set the stage here, what's going on in 1776. African slaves were all over the place. And, well, not all over the place, but, you know, basically east of the Mississippi River at this point. Or am I wrong about that?
No, you're right. Okay. I was going to support you. Like, a lot of people think, well, yes, slavery was just southern. No, I mean, in the colonies, slavery was everywhere. And slaves made up 20% of the population. In some states, they were more concentrated than in other states. And I think they might have never been in Rhode Island or Pennsylvania. I'm not sure. But you could find states in the north as well as the south at the time.
For sure. Because the south was a lot of the commerce was based on the plantation model. Obviously, a lot more slaves in the South, to the tune of like 40% in Virginia. South Carolina was 60% slaves. But even up in Boston, slaves made up 20% of the population.
Right.
So before the War for Independence even started, there was an effort by the British to get American slaves on their side and basically say, hey, be a loyalist and take up arms against your plantation owner, and we will grant you freedom.
Yep. Not only are we going to grant you freedom, we're going to give you some land after we kick the rebels' butts.
Yeah, there was a governor, the British royal governor of Virginia, Lord Dunmore, said this was sort of the first, the first Emancipation Proclamation,
yeah,
where he said, you know, you guys can be free, take up arms against your oppressors, because they were looking for people to fight. Like every time this happened a couple of times, it's because they needed men to fight on their side. It wasn't, I mean, I wish it was just some altruistic move, but it was like, we need feet on the ground with guns.
Right. That first proclamation by Dunmore was proclaimed before the Declaration of Independence was ever signed. This is while
in 75.
Yeah, this is while the rebellion is just starting up and it's kind of isolated and sporadic. And there was an armed rebellion in Virginia that Dunmore, the governor of Virginia, was trying to put down. And so that's why he said, you come fight for us, rise up against your plantation owners and what were the guys who, like, the overseers? You rise up against these guys, the rebels, we will give you your freedom. And, I mean, at this point, it's not even clear that the colonies are going to form an armed organized revolt like the Revolutionary War. So it just seemed like this was a rebellion, a local rebellion that needed putting down.
Yeah, and they even, I believe between about 800 and 2,000 slaves and servants, indentured servants, fled their plantations, took up arms. There was one regiment named Dunmore's Ethiopian Regiment, which had a on their uniform the insignia "Liberty to Slaves."
Yeah,
which is pretty cool. And this was, like I said, the first big mass emancipation, close to 100 years before Abraham Lincoln signed the official Emancipation Proclamation.
Yeah, and what was cool about it was these the slaves who took up the British offer. Were not just like fighting for their own freedom; they were fighting to free the slaves who were, you know, left behind.
Sure,
it was really it was pretty cool. I had not heard about the Ethiopian regiment before, but as the American Revolution goes into full swing, and by I think 1779, when the tide is turning against the British released a second Emancipation Proclamation and said, hey, if you just leave and come over to British-held territory, you'll be free. You don't even have to fight.
Yeah, this was a cool idea because this basically was like they think they can get more people to do that if they don't think they have to fight.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does is it leaks all these workers from the plantations, and then in order to guard their plantations, now the plantation owners had to, you know, use people that would have been fighting in the war to stay at home and guard that plantation. So it was known as a economic warfare, basically.
Right, which is pretty smart. And for the African slaves who took them up on their offer, there was win-win for them. So I think a total of 12,000 African-descended slaves fought for the British during the Revolutionary War.
Yeah.
And at the end of the war, which the American colonies won, there was a problem because, I mean, it wasn't like the Brits were like, all right, fine, we're going home. There was a negotiated treaty. Like, there was an end to hostilities. It was like a formal war. And in formal wars, things come up, things happen in war that need to be settled after the war. One of the main points of contention was the status of the African slaves who had defected or just gone over to the British side and said, hey, we're here to fight. What was to be done with them? And the Brits could have very easily been like, haha, suckers, we're not going to keep our word on any of this. But they didn't do that. They didn't keep their word on all of it, but they kept their word on some of it. And let's just take a quick break, Chuck, and we'll come back and fill everybody in on the rest of the details. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com/welcometonow.
All right, so when we left, the war is over. George Washington is negotiated to have quote-unquote U.S. property returned, which included these enslaved Africans. And on the other side, you have a commander-in-chief named Guy Carleton, who said, well, you know, we gave our word and negotiated these certificates of freedom for these loyalists. But here's what we're going to do, everyone. We think you need to leave the country, and we think you should go to Nova Scotia, which is a province in Canada that we rule. And I'm sure they were like, Nova Scotia? This is not what I signed up for. But they went there anyway. And in the 18th century, in the late 18th century, 40,000 loyalists, both white and black, went to Nova Scotia, including more than 1,200 slaves of these white loyalists. And all of a sudden, Nova Scotia was like, we don't have resources for all these people.
No, it was called Nova Scarcity at the time, which I'm guessing you knew.
Yes.
So this is kind of a big problem, Chuck, because the population of Nova Scotia at the time was what, like maybe 12 or something, 13,000 people. And all of a sudden, 40,000 showed up?
Yeah.
And when that happens, just common economics means that you have a really, really big labor supply and probably not nearly enough demand. And so when that happens, people start to fight with one another.
Yeah. And, you know, like you would imagine, even in Nova Scotia, these new arrivals were kind of kicked to the back of the line, and things got tense. Finally, at one point, there was a black preacher named David George baptized a white woman, and that sparked what people basically say is the first race riot in North America in 1784.
Yeah, the Shelburne riot. The whites showed up and they beat David George pretty bad. They went through the Shelburne settlement, which is largely African freed slaves, and literally pulled their houses over, just trashed the place. And this riot went on for months. And it sounds pretty familiar. It's you're selling your labor for too cheap and stealing our jobs, so we're going to take all of our angst out on you. So the riot was finally put down when troops came in from Halifax, the capital of Nova Scotia, and restored order. But by this point, the black loyalists, who had been promised not just freedom, but remember, land, and are now ending up in Nova Scotia where things are really, really tense, they're like, we've got to get the crown to do something about this. So they send a guy named Thomas Peters to go petition the crown in London, or Parliament at least, one of them, and say, hey, you know, can we get our land now? We did everything we were asked of. And he didn't get anywhere with the crown, at least.
No, they said, well, we've got another idea. We've got this area in West Africa, in Sierra Leone. Mm-hmm. And what we think is a good idea is to make this like a sanctuary for you folks. And we can send you over there, and it'll be great. You're going to love it. That's the best place for freed slaves to be back in Africa. It became basically in 1792, when 15 ships sailed from Halifax Harbor, the very first voyage of the Back to Africa movement. Mm-hmm. And there were some that stayed back in Nova Scotia, and they settled at a place called Birchtown, named after Samuel Birch. But a lot of them left and went to Sierra Leone. And that was sort of the end-ish of that story. The cool thing is you can still trace... there are 20,000 black people living in Nova Scotia today, and you can trace a lot of those back to these black loyalists.
Yeah, there's one guy that shows up in this article named Jason Farmer. He's a ninth generation descendant of a black loyalist named Jupiter Farmer. And Jupiter married a woman named Venus, if you can believe that. And his family's been living in Birchtown for about 230 years.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. He works at the Black Loyalist Heritage Center and Historical Site. And he said a lot of people in Nova Scotia, even descendants, don't even realize that this is their history. And so when I tell the story, he said it's pretty powerful stuff.
Yeah. Well, good pick, Chuck. I'm glad we did this one.
Yeah.
If you want to know more about Black Loyalists, go check it out on the internet and send us an email in the meantime to stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com.